Recognized for making stallions and curly stands, the Mid-Atlantic's leading first and second crop sires, Divining Rod by Tappan and Mosler by Warfront, as well as Frisian Fire, Maryland's 5/8 mile training track, completes the full service facilities from the folding barn to the racetrack. Join the excitement of racing with Country Life Farm, where our partnerships can take you from beginning to winning.
Horse racing fans, major Southern California thoroughbred racing continues at Los Alamitos Racecourse with the LA County Fair Meet, with exciting daytime racing through July 10th. First post today is 2 p.m. Pacific. The Saturday night card will include the running of the Los Alamitos Derby. Slowdown Andy will look to become the first to win the Los Alamitos Futurity and Derby. The field will also include recent Affirmed Stakes runner-up High Connection. And on Sunday afternoon, our closing day program will include mandatory payouts on all wagers. Plus, our day and night weekend doubleheaders continue as our nighttime action follows the daytime cards. The Saturday night card includes the Governor's Cup Futurity Trials. The Governor's Cup Derby Trials are set for Sunday night. Watch all the action on TVG or at your favorite satellite facility or ADW provider. Great day and night racing continues at Los Alamitos. For more, visit losalamitos.com.
Why, in the past decade, has BRL Equine become the premier equine supplement company in the industry? Because we spend millions in research and development before we ever put out a product. Because we use only FDA-supervised facilities to manufacture for us. Because what we say is in them is in them. Because they work. Because if you're not happy, I'll give you your money back. And because top trainers and veterinarians in thoroughbred racing, standardbred racing, three-day eventing, and barrel racing all trust in BRL Equine. Shouldn't you? To find out more how Flexify HA, Unlock, LeaderShield, and EPO Equine can help you, contact me, Joseph Vellante, 215-501-6880.
Horsebills.com is a cost-effective, time-saving paperless revolution. Vendors are able to generate electronic invoices for owners and other vendors who can pay through Horsebills.com for just 50 cents. Turn hours of work into minutes with our easy-to-use site. Have our team take over your bookkeeping or continue to do it yourself and pay only our low monthly subscription fee. Check out our video tutorial on the Horsebills.com YouTube channel and get started today for free. Horsebills.com. Toll-free number 888-938-4643.
Here in Pennsylvania, we're proud of our breeding program, the best in North America. But we're also proud to be leaders in this industry. The PA Horse Breeders Association is funding cutting-edge research at Penn Vet to detect gene doping in thoroughbreds. And we endorse the SAFE Act to help protect the most vulnerable horses. Plus, we're pleased to support the aftercare programs set up by our horsemen's groups. Just a few of the reasons why you should join us in Pennsylvania, the premier place to breed and race.
Now, back to At the Races with Steve Bick on Sirius XM Radio.
Love is bad. Love is bad. Love is bad. Love is bad. For a moment, there it goes. Turn around, next thing you know.
Well, we're back in Saratoga, hour two. We're about 20 in. Nick Tamaro joining us to get things going, and we'll look at both today and part of tomorrow and get you situated and off and running. And, of course, Nick's analysis on a daily basis for the New York circuit at In the Money. And, Nick, good morning. Welcome back for Saratoga 22.
Good morning. Thanks, my friend. Happy Saratoga.
When you're coming up when, by the way?
Travers.
Travers only. Okay. All right. All right. That works. That works.
Yep. Better than nothing.
That's true. That's true. But of course, I missed you downstate, which was too bad. But we'll look forward to it. And with Nick's visit, by the way, I will remind again, Saturday contest, Naira Bets, $300 buy-ins, and the low roller contest as well. And You know what? That reminds me. I did not get the results from Saturday. I got to go pull those up. I'm glad. And in fact, Pat McKenna is getting a shoe shine next to me. And so maybe, is that all right that I'd let everybody know where they can find you for the next 8 minutes? The contest, is there a recap of the contest up on the website?
Should be.
Yeah? All right. All right, I'll find it. Nick, what a great start, these first three cards. Nice size fields and some fascinating matchups. And really doesn't matter what level in terms of price. Even the claiming races look pretty compelling.
Yeah, no, it's a great offering the first couple of days. Friday's card might actually be a little bit better than today's. And today's is outstanding. So it's and it's nice, of course, to see on Saturday a big full field in the Sanford. I've just gotten started on Saturday and focusing on these first two and getting them knocked out. But, look at the back half of today's card. You've got a big field in the sixth and a competitive slate for the Wilton trying the new chute. And then the Schuylerville looks like a really competitive race as well. And that is sandwiched between a couple of big fields on the turf. So it's what Saratoga generally offers up, a lot of wagering opportunities. I would remind everybody, and I should take my own advice at times, that it's a marathon, not a sprint, and you don't want to go throwing a ton of your bankroll at it the first couple of days, because that might leave you not nearly enough bankroll for when you have that good opinion. But
well, I'm losing you there for a minute, Nick.
Have that kind of bankroll flexibility.
Well, I lost you just a little bit. Transmission-wise, but Nick, give everybody aside from being cautious and waiting in and getting a feel, what are some of the maxims that you kind of live by in terms of the configurations and the two turf courses, etc. We certainly it's funny, we start out every year with a 9-furlong main track event so that horses leave from right in front of the apron and everybody sees it, and one thing that seems to be true year in, year out is speed going 9 furlongs.
Yeah, speed going 9 furlongs is really tough to beat. It's been played out that way year after year, and so I would caution anybody against playing deep closers at 9 furlongs. It's just a very, very pace-oriented trip. I'm interested to see how this mile chute plays and how many races are run on it. I'm inclined to think it's going to be a pretty speed-favoring trip as well with the ground that the outside runners lose coming right out of the gate. But, all the reports you hear is that it's a forgiving kind of entry into the turn, so it won't really penalize anybody drawn outside too terribly. I'll be interested to see if Todd Fletcher runs Amore in there in the Wilton today against some of her stablemates, having drawn the 9. But speed plays well on the main track. It's purely anecdotal for me at the moment. I don't have any hardcore data. To me, in my experience and in the work I had done on it in the past, Belmont is generally the fairest dirt track of the NIRA slate, and Saratoga is the most speed biased. That doesn't mean you're generally going to have a speed bias day in and day out, but it does mean that on the main track you want to give a little bit of a nod towards forwardly placed horses. The turf courses usually are very fair until we get into an extreme situation with regards to weather. So if it's very dry, then we'll see the inner turf late in the meet play very kindly to speed. The rail will also become a major advantage. One thing that was actually quite lucrative last year was when the rail came down on the inner, which it usually doesn't come down until four-star Dave week, the inside pass was gold. And anybody who lost ground was an enormous bet back. There were a lot of those opportunities as the summer wore on and even into the fall at Belmont. So just keep an eye on that. The Mellon is usually a very fair surface. Just turf sprints are races where you want to be careful about taking anybody from too far out of it. That it's just 5.5 as opposed to the 6 or 7 at Belmont. So you don't want to have to be coming from too deep in the pack.
There you go. There's a basis to get going. And I don't know. Do you want to kind of run through either the highlights or today? A lot of people probably listening to the replay, but give a few for today, Nick, and then we'll go through Friday.
Yeah, I would say one of the horses I'm looking forward to betting today is in the 6, the 10 Propensity, who's coming in off a better effort than it looks on paper. He stalked a really hot pace, ended up burying the other front runner and got collared late. King Moon Racer, one door to his inside, is going to be the favorite, and I'm not certain that he didn't run better than King Moon Racer last time. With all due respect to Jose Gomez, it's a jockey upgrade to Jose Lascano, who's likely to keep him a little bit off the pace, and I think that's where the winner of this race comes from, with a lot of front-end speed signed on. The eighth race, I don't know if maybe the one Canisi is fool's gold. I wonder a little bit about the strength and quality of the race she comes out of, but she should have won that race by three lengths. And Javier Castellano did the right thing in the sense of trying to save ground and avoid losing a lot of ground on the turn, but it ended up leaving him stuck behind a wall of horses. And as the race collapsed, the winner made the widest move of all, and she ended up getting outfooted there and just had too much of a deficit to make up. She was supposed to win. This is a tougher race from top to bottom. Obviously, one other than to Saratoga are deeper and more competitive races than they are at Belmont in general. But I thought she ran very well, and I think with a cleaner trip, being inside, she's going to be able to save ground. I thought that would make her pretty dangerous. I like the 10 Dame Time in the last also, coming in off a victory for George Weaver. Now, first off the claim, he's got really good numbers first off the claim on the turf, 27% with a $2 and change ROI. And this horse's turf races, I think, are a little dirtied up. She's been close to hot paces, been a little too involved. I'm hoping that Trevor McCarthy does something similar to what I'm hoping for with Propensity and keeps her a little bit off of it, ready to pounce late. Abusive Power is clearly the horse to beat, but I think if Dame Time can work out the right trip, she could potentially be an upsetter at what would be a pretty square price. I'll tell you two horses on tomorrow's card that I'm really, really looking forward to, and the first of them is going to come early on the card in the third. Go back and watch the replay of the Three Whistlers Honors last race. This is a comment that is a little subtle in the sense that it says inside, never extended. This horse had no opportunity to run whatsoever. Jose Ortiz took the somewhat mystifying approach of trying to keep him inside when the race was developing, and it was a total outside flow race. The winner ended up running down a horse who had made a big wide move, and so Whistler's Honor was just totally out of position. Jorge Abreu was also 0 for the month of May and then had 5 wins between June and July at Belmont. He's also done really well at Saratoga the last couple of years. I'm imagining his barn is going to get going pretty quickly upstate. And in the feature, the Forbidden Apple, which is just a terrific race and should yield some starters for next month's four-star Dave, there are going to be people that give up on him. I love Public Sector in this race. I think Public Sector is coming in exactly the right way. I thought he was compromised badly by the pace last time out in the poker, and he still put in a good late run. Irad is back on board, and there's going to be an abundance of speed in this field. If it holds together, even with a couple of scratches, this thing should be run at a really strong early clip, so I'm looking for him to rebound, and I think he's going to be a pretty square price in what amounts to a really, really competitive race.
And to stay with that Forbidden Apple tomorrow, Set Piece and Mirror Mission, both appealed to me. In fact, Tracy Wilkes was with us yesterday, and pretty much unsolicited, she was gushing about Mirror Mission. But Public Sector was my third horse with the two of them inside. And you know, go back to that New York bred maiden special weight. My favorite angle that over the last few years we've really pounded home, which is New York Breds long on the turf. It's always worthwhile to consider, you know, horses that look, maybe a notch below the obvious, because there's really very little separating them. Whistler's Honor, I like every part of what you discussed. I thought that Uragano, Kelly Breen, is the obvious other player in here, Nick, at 5-1.
Yeah, he seemed like one I could definitely include. Had a little bit more of a forwardly placed trip in the race that they're all coming out of, where, you know, I think you want Whistler's Honor more than anybody, but I could see Uragano being one of the alternatives. And as far as the Forbidden Apple goes, I picked a 7-1-3. So the two Kentucky horses you referenced were the other two I picked in the money. And they're both here, of course, because the Wise Dan was taken off the turf, which, you know, is really to Naira's benefit. Set Piece is a horse who easily can win this race, and his race in the dinner party last time out at Pimlico was very good. Mirror Mission's effort in the Turf Classic at Churchill was outstanding. So he might have just, and he also really came to life at Saratoga last year with Tom Bush. And that's one thing to keep in mind as well, talking about, you know, larger picture, bigger picture things with regards to Saratoga. Some horses just really thrive up there. And I don't think you need to say anything more than Got Stormy. not all horses thrive as much as she did in Saratoga, but you really see some that, and you see some on the flip side that don't, right? And so you want to look and see if past Saratoga form really holds up.
Well, and in fact, on that topic, there's even a horse today that kind of jumped off at me that I thought needed a little added consideration, and now I'm going to have to dig around. I'm going to forget who it was that broke their maiden. If it was on today, is it on today's card or is it yesterday? There was somebody, and maybe it's in that starter allowance. Let me thumb back to. Maybe not. I will find it, Nick. There was somebody who's kind of muddied up and who's going to be a square enough price that broke their maiden here. And
well, it's probably Propensity that you're talking about, who I was talking about before. He broke his maiden and then ran second in his first try against Winners. And now
okay.
He's a little dirtied up with his recent form. But yeah, he did that last year for Mott. Now he's with a different trainer, but still looks like a horse who can be dangerous. He's with John Kimmel now. John Kimmel quietly had a very nice Belmont.
Yes, he did.
So they're a guy. He had five wins at Belmont, which, you know, was very, very solid, including a maiden win with Win It last week that ended up proving to be pretty impressive.
A couple of other spots. On Friday in that fourth race, how about the multi-whammy involved with Brad Cox and the Bob LaPenta $250,000 candy ride colt, who is dropping down, cutting back, turf to dirt, first Lasix, blinkers on. I usually call it the triple whammy. Then there's the quadruple whammy. This is the quinta whammy. Crazy being given away for $20,000.
Yeah, I didn't love the move. In fact, the fact that this horse went for that kind of money, Majestic Presence was a filly that was pretty highly regarded early in her career. She was actually one of the horses that I bet in the Breeders' Cup Juvenile Fillies in 2014. Yeah, they're just waving the white flag on this horse a little too quick for my liking. I didn't have anything clever to say in this race. I picked the one. Actualize looks like he's just probably going to go to the lead. Charlie Baker has a very solid record across all throughout New York, but specifically on the dirt at Saratoga. So I was hoping that Actualize just kind of took it to him early. I'll mention in there that Inspired Mischief is a second-time starter for Todd Pletcher. Over the last 5 years, Todd Pletcher was second-time starting maidens, dropping in for a tag on the dirt. He's 31% with a $1.26 ROI. He's 0-for-9 with horses that were 3-to-1 or more. So those have pretty much all been favorites. This horse is not going to be the favorite. He might even be as much as the third choice. So the other one I could probably entertain is Suppressor. I don't love 0-for-12 maidens, but he was inside last time out. Might have been a little advantage to being outside. Did get involved in a hot pace, but I couldn't really make anybody but the one there.
Yeah, there's a bunch of races already. I didn't do fine tooth work on Saturday yet, but there's a bunch of places where it's obvious, Dick, people are dropping horses in for wins, and if they get claimed, so be it. And most notably, Chad Brown has got a little bit of that, and so does Todd Pletcher. Good morning, my man. See Yakka driving by. What do you make of that? In fact, today, Nick, there's the five droppers in the third race, that 40 claimer.
Yeah, I mean, you know, I don't think it really varies much by connections. I think a lot of these people are trying to win. They're also trying to get certain horses out of their barn. You know, I think the shining example on today's card is probably Abuse of Power, the Nightcap, who is 100% to get claimed. And is a horse who probably could be competitive against much better, and actually was last time out. I don't think anybody in the third really surprised me that they're in for a tag, other than High Tide. Right, High Tide was fourth, beaten a length and a two other than last time out. Now he's coming back off a layoff after being in razor sharp form for 40. So I mean, Carlos Martin knows this horse is 100% getting claimed, and it's a little disconcerting. Right, it's not the greatest sign that he would want to give up on a horse that easily. But, you know, this is Saratoga, where you want to be competitive. You want to win races early if possible. You're showcasing what you have in terms of your talent in the barn. And the better they do early on, the better it is your opportunities in terms of maybe getting more horses in your barn or you know, opportunities like that. There are some New York Red Maidens in the SIF that are dropping in. None of them really surprised me all that much. Maybe Tommy Gunn a little bit, because this is a horse that George Weaver was willing to run in a New York Red restricted stake at second asking. But again, I mean, he's trying to win races and wants to make a splash right away. He's had a slow start to Saratoga a couple of times in recent years. And obviously everybody, I think, is going to be pulling for George a little bit too with all that's going on in his personal life. And so, you know, best to him and the family. And hopefully, I'm a huge George Weaver fan. So I hope that he has a good meet and he's got a couple of horses today that I'm going to bet.
Well, he's got four, right? He's got four in today, and every time I started to identify potential winners, one of George's horses, you know, seemed a player.
Yeah, and I'll tell you what, I banged the drum on George Weaver a long time ago, and then he went from being underrated to completely overexposed. and I'm not taking credit for it, I promise, but, you know, he used to be one of the best value trainers around, especially at Saratoga.
Yes.
And I think stabling up there and having a lot of his string up there early really helped. And he looks pretty well represented right now. I think he's got some better horses in his barn than he's had in a while. So I'm expecting him to be one of those guys that clips along and wins 10, 12 races. And we all sort of note that it was a really productive stand.
Two more from tomorrow, Nick, before we let you go. The fifth and the sixth, the anchor leg of the early pick five and the early pick four, and then the sixth, which starts the late pick five. The fifth is a 35 non-2 claimer, and I thought it was a tricky read in here. There's some horses with talent. You got droppers galore in here as well.
Yeah, you know, this is the difficulty of the fifth is that, and I knew you were going to ask about that sixth, but the difficulty of the fifth is that Al's Prince is the horse to beat, clearly, but he's drawn poorly. He's in the 10 in a bulky field. The other horse that comes in off a really good effort is the 12, Born a Gambler, and he's in an even worse spot, second off the layoff, breaking from the 12 in a full field. So, you know, you want to look for as many alternatives as possible. Al's Prince ran very well in that Hilliard practice squad race. That race was totally dominated on the rail. He was outside chasing the whole way. The pace was strong. I don't blame Javier for trying to get him more involved early, but I think it actually was to his detriment when all was said and done. So I'm looking for an improved effort from him for sure. The alternatives to me just really weren't that appealing, Steve. It was hard to really latch on to anyone and say, boy, you know, if they run that race, they're really going to be dangerous. And so I ended up being somewhat basic here and picked it 10-12-2. Guccio Bra draws well on the inside. He was in the Hilliard race as well. Gets Irad second off the layoff. You know, if you're believing like I was that race was dominated inside, he never got a break. He was wide the whole way. So you could probably upgrade him a tad as well, and he'll be a decent enough price. My take on the sixth is to throw out everybody from the race with Ruse except for Ruse, because Ruse is the only one who really did a lot of running. Bar 14 went to the lead. He has no shot to wire this field. I think Bar 14's a cool horse, but I can't see him getting loose in this race and wiring the field. And so all of the horses that made up ground in there, Danzig with the Stars, Saratoga Flash actually went backwards, Grape Nuts Warrior, they all had no excuse at all. I mean, they had everything set up for them. They barely, Shulane ran Ruse down, but I don't love the race in general. The only horse, like I said, I would take is Ruse. Ruse, of course, has won two races. They both have been at Saratoga. They were both wire to wire. And again, if you believe, like I do, that Bar 14 isn't wiring the field, then it's hard to believe that Ruse might. I picked Regal Speaker. I don't love his outside post. I don't love that Danny Gargan has not been as productive in the last year or so in New York as he had been prior. But this is a good rider switch to Tyler. Second off the layoff, this is a big class drop. This is a horse that's consistently run against an open company, now facing New York Breds again. He's supposed to be in a good position. 10-1 on the morning line. I'll take it. I just wanted horses that weren't in that race. And Shrine to Gold had too good a trip last time out and has pulled off a chandelier act a few too many times for my liking. And as much as my friend Cotton made me happy winning last time out, I don't think he's quite good enough to handle these. I'll give you a stat also on Ghost Giant, who comes into this race from open company races. Rob Attriss, last 5 years, turf routes at Saratoga, 0-20.
Interesting, because because just off of that angle, the open company back to state bred company, just on that, and you know, the horse is consistent. He's been very solid. Hasn't won since being claimed by Michael Dubb, but has run well enough. I mean, he feels like a horse that gets a piece. Carmouche's familiar with him, and just missed last November at Aqueduct by a neck, and most recently beaten three against the likes of Dancing Buck. So I thought he was...
He compromised that day, too, badly. I mean, that was a race that really
didn't
held together.
Break.
He had no setup. Yeah,
yeah, exactly. And yeah, was shuffled. Yeah, really... was off early, so I thought he was a consideration. He was an exotic player. I thought this was a tough race. I mean, those are my favorite, the New York Breds going long on the grass. Nick Tamro, everybody, NTAM 1215. Nick, finally, the other two stakes that we didn't talk about, the Coronation Cup tomorrow and the Schuylerville today.
Yeah, I picked Lucas's horse on the outside today, Summer Princess. She's going to be the favorite, I think, when all is said and done. I thought her maiden win was very good. Obviously, the runner-up came back and won yesterday. Colonial, it was on the turf. Not sure how much that matters, but I think it just goes to show you there was some quality in that Churchill two-year-old race that Summer Princess won. The Coronation Cup has four horses that are also entered in the Blue Sparkler at Monmouth on Saturday, so we're going to see who ends up running. Empress Tigress on the outside is where I landed for Jonathan Thomas. One of the two that he entered, I believe he'll run Ben Bang at Monmouth. Empress Tigress is an AE at Monmouth in Saturday's stake. Empress Tigress has big second family turf pedigree, being the dam was a half to both Stays in Vegas and a really nice horse named Miss Technicality, who broke her maiden on debut for Christophe Clement and then won a stake race before running into Newspaper of Record. So there's some turf pedigree there, and so I'll take that chance that she gets the right kind of trip from the outside in what might not be an entirely fast-paced race with some of those scratches, but just give me anybody against Twilight Gleaming. Twilight Gleaming is the biggest bet against in a stake race to me of the opening two cards.
And I was going to ask you a little bit about maybe some bet against. I thought that maybe Lynch, the 8-1 Static Fire, the 7 and the 1 Marissa's Lady at 8-1 for Bill Morey. And I think Maury's going to win the opener today, actually.
She's also re-entered at Monmouth, too, FYI, Marissa's Lady.
I will check with, maybe we'll check with Maury. See, well, we should know. Let me see. Has Andy, I said there can't be any scratches if Andy hasn't sent them out. So let's see. Let's see. It's 10:48. And boom, they're out. Here we go. Here's your scratches. Very good. They're ready to go. Let me circulate them. Thanks to Andy, as always, for that. And thanks to Nick for giving us our first two looks. We will talk tomorrow for the weekend.
Yes, sir.
Nick Tamaro, folks, NTAM 1215. And, of course, at In the Money as well for his written analysis. Joe Clancy is sitting across from me, and great to get Joe in here. It's Thursday, and as I said early, that we were going to get at least two of the Saratoga Special team to visit, and we got the bonus. We had a chance to meet the interns.
Yeah, the new crew, which is kind of fun to see them come show up in there. And Spencer and Timothy, they've been here. Spencer lives here, but Timothy came in from Chicago. They've been here on the job for a couple days and shaking out a lot of bugs is how I try to explain the first few days at Saratoga for us. So it's the way it goes. But first paper got out. We made it. And here we are.
I like how Law went to bed before the paper was put to bed.
Yeah, well, once. We'll give him one.
No.
I hope you talked about, my little brother who's not even here. So,
we gave him the appropriate
Okay, good. Just checking.
Yeah, we gave him the grief that but I understand so Miles is being blamed?
Yeah. Yeah, which is convenient, I think, but I'm not sure. We'll see. We'll see. We actually were done. We were finished the print portion and transmitting pages a little earlier than usual last night. Then the wheels came off because at about 12:30, I got a call from the printer saying the files did not fully transfer, and I had to figure out another way. And they were really close to saying, we can't print your job. At 1:30, I shared a Google folder with them, and we did it the old-fashioned way, and we got it done. So yeah, it was an easy deadline process, but that got really hard afterwards. So
jeez,
you never know.
It's funny because not unusual. Now that you say this, and even if you prepare as much as you prepare, the last several years, I've been using this plug-in spot, and yesterday, Wednesday, I kind of surprised them by showing up yesterday because a number of people wanted to sit down and be, they were going to be on the grounds. So, Lafitte Benkai and Seth Merrow and Dick Powell. So we ended up having a crazy day because there were people all over the place. But they had trouble with their network. I mean, with getting the network up and running and even the Wi-Fi. And so then even this morning, they had the hiccup. Last night, I'm doing the thing with Capital OTB again, the DePaula Chevrolet play of the day, and me and Anthony Stabile, and I went to go transmit the little 90-second video. Why should that be a problem? Sure enough, it became a problem. I started sending it at 5, tried it again. We had a really nice dinner in town with our partner Steve Carlin, which is great. Steve here with another any number of friends and partners that are coming into town. So, everything, all the connections, aren't necessarily smooth and ready to snap.
No, it's a little like, I don't train horses, but it's a little like getting a horse to the race. Like, you don't know until you actually get there. And we were just, that part, we tested them the day before, and it worked out fine. It prints at the Times Union in Albany. They're big. They have a huge printing plant, very sophisticated. It automatically transmits stuff to the plate maker. It's all beyond me, but whatever. And for whatever reason, it stood in the gate yesterday, at least for a while. And 1:30 in the morning, there were cars lined up. That was kind of interesting on East Avenue. People were ready to spending the night in their cars to get in line to get in the gate at the place. So
It's not even.
I love it.
It's not even that all that crazy busy. There's a nice.
The loyalists are into it though. So it was kind of, that was encouraging to see. As I left with some cold pizza at 1:30 in the morning, there were a dozen, maybe 15 cars parked in front of the office.
How about that? I love it. I didn't get in until about 7:45, but you could tell. You can always tell how busy it is based on how many cars are parked out East Avenue and how far past 5th they're parked. And then of course, on weekends when they're thronging the Oklahoma on the parking side. We talked to Tom earlier, and Joe Clancy with us now. We'll get Sean, if he chooses to come up for this summer. We'll talk to Sean probably next week ahead of the first jump races. Talked to Bill Gallo this morning, one of the first people I saw, then Woodbury, saw Woodbury Payne as well. And got off to a good start. The flat track jump season got off the dime nicely on Monday at Colonial.
Yeah, it was, it was sort of the season went dormant there for a little while, so I'm sure trainers were happy to get back in some action. And, they're always looking towards Saratoga with some, especially the maiden winners, if they can do it impressively enough at Colonial, they're trying to get here for Never 1-2 and a solid purse. So it's a good program once it sort of got rolling, but there was basically no racing in June, and you kind of had to regroup and aim for Colonial, and then they'll be up here. And I think people are pretty excited about it. Hopefully the field size is going to always be a little bit of a struggle. It's just not many horses and even a limited number of trainers, so they're trying to spread the horses around and come up with the best fields they can.
And Bill Gallo delighted because the horses that won, Arch Kingsley and Kerry Breon, they get to graduate and come right up here. He's got three allowance condition non-winner of two kind of races scheduled. And that'll be very productive to get two maiden breakers of every week at Colonial and these first few weeks, and then they just should fill up. You should have good field size.
Yeah, you really saw it. I mean, the steeplechase schedule and the horse population really took a hit from COVID, and it's still shaking out because you don't, you know, you can buy a horse to go jumping, but then you got to teach it to jump and do the things. And they lost 2 years ago. They had 80 races all year, so there were so few maidens that won that owners said, "I already own maidens, I don't need." So it's all kind of backlogged, and now it seems like there's a lot of maidens in the pipeline and coming along. And you know, the more like you touched on, the more that can kind of win at Colonial. If you get one or two every week, that's only going to fuel the other races down the line. So it's good. Hopefully it holds together. And I know it's, people ask me about it here, and I mean, it's such a tradition here that, you know, it's part of it. So to have the jump races on Wednesdays is great, and it just goes back to all the legends that did it for so long. So it's cool.
I've had this conversation thinking about it with Sean, but not necessarily with you. When was your first foray up here?
I'm sure it was with my dad in the back of a horse van to run some jumpers in the mid to late 70s. We actually came and rented a house. I remember as a kid, it was like a vacation. The house had a little above ground pools over on the west side somewhere. And he came up with three or four horses. I think the best they did was third and fourth. Got Peter Pugh, I think, rode for him a little bit.
Oh, so, wow.
Yeah, and that would have been as a little kid. We were here. That was probably, I know we were here when Secretary ran against Onion because we got goofy photos out. We were standing on the turn.
Wow.
We couldn't get into place, but we pulled over on Union Avenue and stood on the turn, and there's a photo of the Clancys with Secretary walking by in the background before the race.
Warming, oh, that's
up,
cool.
You know.
But
it's a little square, you know.
Like an Instamatic kind of a thing.
Totally. So that was 73, so we were here then, you know, as I got older, it was to come up and run horses, you know, and either on the van for short trips, or I was here in high school. I spent a summer here. We rented and we had three or four horses in the annex, some jumpers and a flat horse or two. And we rented a house that was part of an old boarding school in Schuylerville, like way over by the canal and the locks and things.
Oh my God! Not, you don't mean the one in Thompson?
Maybe
the one
I have no idea.
It absolutely is the one in Thompson. a small squarish brick building.
Maybe, yeah. But it was part of a whole complex of.
Okay,
it was more
not.
Like a summer campy thing. Because they had a bunch of buildings on the grounds of this school, and you could walk down to the river, but it was above, there was a lock right anyway. We were saving money, you know, and we drove a six horse horse van,
wow,
back and forth, you know, to save the owner's money on where we were living. But who knows what we were, it really didn't make sense. But we did win a race that year. Horse named Hawaiki won a jump race, and that was a big deal for us. So
I love it. And then as part of the Steeplechase Times. And how far back? So,
the Cecil Whig newspaper then, too, and covering some horses from Fair Hill. So I remember coming up pre-Steeplechase Times to cover a couple of horses that came up and ran in a stake. Mike Goswell had Channel 3, really good sprinter, Philly sprinter in the 90s for Henry Elser. And she ran up here, and a couple others. There was a filly named Songlines that ran on the grass. Again, that was pre-Steeplechase Times. And then we come up for the jump races during Steeplechase Times, and then which led, you know, up to the special, which was, so Steeplechase Times was 94, you know, and I was certainly coming then. Never really stayed the whole meet then. Those were short-term trips or whatever. When Sean was riding, he was obviously staying. I either crashed at his place or somewhere else we could find. And then the special itself started in 2001.
Wow, so it is a compacted.
It's crazy when you think about it.
Yeah, it really is, because you know, I can absolutely remember when it showed up, and the whole, it was such a novelty at the time. But it was an instant hit. It felt like something. It probably didn't feel that way
to
you guys.
No, definitely not instant. I felt like we were begging people to read it. But I do go back to, I mean, I remember riding in, we were probably staying out of town somewhere to save money, and we were in the horse van to come into town to dinner, and we were in the back, no horses, but that was the vehicle Dad's driving, you know, and there were Dad and one other person in the cab and two or three kids in the back, you know, and we pull up to, we go eat at De Rossi's restaurant on the west side, which is over by Beekman Street area.
Yeah.
And trying to find a place to park a six-horse fan, you know, it's always challenging. And we'd pile out of the back and go have spaghetti and meatballs at Dorossi's and then pile back in the van. In those days, the pink sheet actually printed at the Saratogian downtown there, and you could get it the night before. Like, it was rolling off the press at 10 or 11.
Wow.
And we'd, you know, park the van and pile out and get the papers as they came out, you know, and then pile back in and go to some hotel or whatever out in Schuylerville or wherever. I don't know where we were. It felt like Maine. It was a long way away.
That is funny. And every, you know, everybody, anybody that has had any history of coming here has got those, you know, those kinds of recollections and experiences. In fact, we touched on it a little bit with Tom inadvertently about, you know, the nightclubbing days. And you know, as somebody that went to Colgate, you know, 2 hours and 40 minutes away and you know, came to, we pretty much had the it was a circuit. There was Wells College outside of Ithaca in Aurora, and then there's Cazenovia College, right close in Cazenovia, and there was Skidmore. So it was basically the, you know, the trifecta of you know, begging girls to pay attention to you. So we would come here, and this was, I say this for people because those that have only been coming, and when I say only, even only 20 years, let's say, since the turn of the century, You can't understand, really, or even conceive of what Broadway looked like with the Grand Union and with Pope's Pizza and with all these threadbare motels that were, you know, ready to topple. The all these grandiose homes that were in need of paint and repair. I mean, the town, the 70s and 80s, was showing real signs of wear, and it was always, there was that period that I talk about where there was this bizarre adversarial relationship where the town was really did not treat the racing association well, and almost were like unwelcoming to, you know, to. And then whatever lightning bolt happened, and a lot of things changed. And in the 90s, and the influx of investment and people retiring here, and the realization that this was the best meat in the country, somehow had been a kept secret, I guess. And it triggered, you know, what is the most remarkable, you know, influx of money, frankly, that you would ever imagine in this town. I mean, with million-dollar condos and every, you know, every postage stamp piece of property that you know is being built on with you know, multi-family, you know, whatever they are, whatever, you know, it's zoned for. People can't believe where this has come from, to be honest. And you can at least, you know, you saw that.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, I obviously was younger, too young to kind of get the idea of, like you talked about, the investment, but that's what's taken. I mean, the quality of things that have been built and just the whole quality of not just the track, but the town and how it's all expanded and become a place to come, a place to stay. And yeah, the idea of living here, you know, living here year-round, I don't know what retirement means just yet, but the, you know, the idea of buying a little house in Saratoga, that really appeals to me, you know, and I'm sure back then it didn't at all. No, who would do that, you know? So it's a great marriage of the track and the town, which obviously what didn't happen for a while. And it really is a part of it, and it is a big part of the community now.
Between Skidmore and the racetrack, I've told this story many, many times over the years. I used to hang around in the carousel, and this goes back to, you know, the 80s and 90s, and particularly when I was living in Montreal and coming down on weekends. And my buddy Phil and I, we would bet from the carousel, the upper carousel. Which used to be a very busy dining room. I mean, it for whatever reason, the upper carousel well, Teresa and the maitre d', she and her brother and sister that pretty much ran the dining room seating operation out of the union out of Albany. But I met this group of people at a table adjacent to the bar where we sat, and I started talking to them. And where are you from? Well, Rochester, but we retired here. This was like in 95, 96. I said, excuse me? What do you mean you retired here? Oh, he was a Xerox exec.
Wow. They were brilliant, as it turned out.
And I said, well, why would you retire here? Well, you know, we got the summer. It's a beautiful, they love the town, and we found a beautiful house, and our kids are grown, you know, out of the house in Rochester, and they retired from Xerox. And what do you do in the winter? Well, there's plenty to do. Skidmore's got, you know, all kinds of music and art and performance and whatnot. And that was, I was living in Montreal. And that was the flashbang that I said to myself, things are happening here. And then when it came time for me to, when I had to leave Canada after 10 years, knowing what I know now, I would have stayed. But I wouldn't have met Tina, though, if I'd
done
that. That's when I said to myself, you know what? Because I knew I was going to have to relocate at some point or become a Canadian resident. And I said, you know what, I could live. So then when it came time in 99, by that time, you know, real estate was already on the upswing, and I kind of had missed the opportunity to, you know, to get a crazy bargain. So I got the crazy bargain 13 miles east in Greenwich in Washington County. And I'm very glad, actually. I mean, very happy with the way that worked out. But, you know, I got a house out there that if it was in Saratoga would have been a $400,000 home at the time, and I got it for $106,000. So yeah, it's interesting. And then you and I had this conversation in Maryland Preakness Week, you guys considering where Tina and I went on the boat.
St. Michael's.
Michael's. That's a lot. That reminded me instantly of Saratoga.
Yep. I love the, I live in, you know, basically suburbia now and almost rural, you know, so the idea of living in a town does appeal to you. And if it had a racetrack and had a little more vibrancy, then yeah, all the better for it. But it is, just to see how much it's, I mean, everything changes. You get a lot, you hear it a lot here, especially when they start, you know, when they do things like this, the new Paddock Bar and this, everything, you know, you hear a lot of static or feedback about, but the world changes, everything, nothing's the same, you know, so, you know, you kind of just, you adapt and appreciate it and move on. I mean, there was, where we're sitting, we can see the horse path and the picnic tables and everything. Well, that was the paddock. I mean, there were horses, that's where they saddled, you know, and there were people everywhere, you know, and
standing just rings, around the horses,
around
the trees.
And I as somebody trying to lead a horse through there at times, it was challenging, you know. So I think, you know, yeah, it's changed, but it's probably much better now, frankly. So, and makes a little more sense in terms of that, you know, trying to make a horse stand still next to a tree as opposed to in a stall is a little more difficult. But, you know, and I think that's just all part of things adapting. It's still Saratoga. It's still, you know, it's still a magical place for racing. It's the one place that, and maybe not the one place, but it is a place where racing so matters. And you just, everywhere you go, it's on everybody's mind. And that's why people like it. It's why we're here. It's why things like this work.
And from that perspective and standpoint, when people grouse and
naysay, so I say,
yeah, there you go. When people are complaining about attendance, you know, downstate. And over the winter and at Belmont, I mean, Belmont, I think Belmont is well on its way with the arena and with the train station. I mean, there's some long-term things to anticipate down there. But as long as there's this kind of a hotbed and as long as there's the opportunity for people to introduce family and friends to the game in this venue. And they go back and they bet and get involved in the game in whatever way they're going to get involved. That's all we really need.
This is priceless. I mean, it's priceless. Right? You can't put a figure on it. The ability to take somebody to the races here and experience this, they wouldn't have to bet a dollar today on their first look to become, hey, I do want to pay a little more attention to that. You know.
Yeah. Keeneland and here and it doesn't have to be a pastoral setting.
I mean,
Churchill and Santa Anita are grandiose, as is Belmont. But the TV coverage and the opportunity to expose the game at any level is what we require. And it's part of my personal frustration when people say, oh, the industry needs to contract. We have to. There's no need for these low-level. This is the same stupidity involved in the destruction of minor league baseball.
Yeah, totally.
That is taking away a gateway venues and geographic portals for people to see the game, because as I've said before, nobody that was at the Indiana Derby on Saturday that knows the different they won't know a 5,000 non-winners of three from Derby starters. It's a spectacle. It's exciting. It provides there's a chance for exciting, thrilling finishes. You can't eliminate that, and yes, the TV exposure helps, but it's not the same as waltzing somebody through the gates.
Oh yeah, and letting them see it that close, and racing's got such a mix to me. It's got animals, it's got competitions, it's got gambling, it's got a little bit of everything. It's got athletes like the jockeys. It's got everything like that. And if you get more people, you just need to get them here. I mean, I don't. Or to any track, not just here. Like Mid-Atlantic Thoroughbred next month is the 50th anniversary of Penn National. So Paul Halloran did a big feature on Penn National, the beginning, and that a track like that is the introduction for people.
Sure.
Like Timonium is getting ready, comes up at the end of the month and into Labor Day. Those are introductions for people. They always are. We get various interns who work for us here. They got here because they went to their local track and they were lucky enough to have one. Anise
exactly.
Montplaisir, she grew up in Fargo. She's in Minnesota. If Canterbury Park isn't there, she doesn't get exposed to it. She's making a career out of it. Timothy, the kid here, is from Chicago. Went to Arlington. It happened, and it's also hands on people. I met a guy at Fairhill who was working for Mike Stidham a few years ago, and he knew nothing about horses, and he was in Chicago. His sister started taking riding lessons. He went along. He realized he liked horses. He walked in the front gate at Arlington, the stable gate, and Mike Stidham's was the second or third barn. He was on the leading trainer list and became a hot walker, and then he went to work for him, and had worked for him for years, and you need that. I think all that introduction to it, and that's at every level. That's the minor league baseball comparison is great in terms of the spectator side, but it's also where people get their first jobs and things too. So
not everybody can go. I mean, when you and I started going to baseball games, when you went to Memorial Stadium to see the Orioles for the first time,
those 50-cent seats at Veterans Stadium at the 700 level.
Exactly right. Exactly right. And not everybody can pay $60 or $30, and if you've got a family of four or five, not everybody can do that. So you go to a Double-A game, and the tickets are $4.50, and they're giving dollar popcorn, dollar hot dogs, and whatever, and it's still, you're still going to walk through a path and see the green expanse. Yeah. Same thing, here when I talk about my friends, Kelly Sullivan and her husband Martin, and their kids that I brought here in the '90s from Montreal, and they've become lifelong fans. And Martin particularly is a serious player. It all came from driving them down from, we were actually up at Lake Memphra Magog on the Vermont border.
Okay.
And said, let's go down. So I drove them down here. And they're like wild-eyed. They've been to Belmont. They've been to every Belmont for the last 15 years,
wow,
probably.
Yeah.
Or more.
Yeah.
Except for the issues, the pandemic issues. So, what, you know, one thing you and I have not discussed that merges into this, how have you guys, or how do you plan to treat the HISA issues in editorial form?
I mean, the various publications we do it for, like Mid-Atlantic Thoroughbred, is a monthly magazine, and we talked about it, and I went, the way things are going, it became very difficult, if not impossible, to cover it there because it seemed to change. Our deadlines are so far in advance; it's was impossible. I see us being able to hopefully talk to some. I've already talked to a few horsemen in the couple days I've been here about, you know, wanting to get some constructive opinions or voices out there about it. I see us hopefully being able to write about it from a column opinion wise. I don't know if we've got the manpower to actually wade into the nuts and bolts news, how all this is going to work in the time frame we do it, but you know, the little bits already with some of the whip rule violations and whether horses get this or that, it's not mind-boggling because it happens all the time with some of these things with horse racing, but it just seems like we dove into the pool and now we're trying to learn how to swim. And, you know, yeah, I support uniform, total,
yeah,
the same thing everywhere. Yep. It needs to happen. If this is the best way to happen, let it happen, then okay, I'm all in. But we've got to get it right, or more right than it is now, I guess. And you feel like you're putting a lot of it on horsemen, you're putting a lot of it on jockeys, you're putting a lot of it on racetracks and trying to make things work. And I don't know if we've got the framework set up yet. I know they're trying, and I think it's, you know, it's admirable, and I hope it works. I really do. But I don't know. It feels like we're, again, like it happens a lot in horse racing. We're adapting on the fly, you know. And I think this is serious enough where we probably need to adapt before we fly. I'm not putting it very well, but I think to watch some of the stuff going on, I know, like the NSA side, they're trying to apply those rules. Well, they had those races at Colonial and they got three jockeys suspended already, you know, and you're like, here we go, you know. And I don't know if that was, you know, it's not right, and if the rule's the rule, fine. But you know, I don't know if anybody was prepared for the kind of repercussions of how the heck this was going to work out.
Well, the ones that are most probably prepared in terms of the riders are probably the guys at Monmouth that last year couldn't raise a stick for anything, for any purpose. So now it's a luxury for them to have the use of six potential,
right,
swats.
Yeah, I don't know. It's wild sometimes to watch it from a step back. I wouldn't want to be in there trying to figure out how to make it work, because between the legal side and the rules side and the various commissions and everything else involved, it's got to be a logistical nightmare. But I think it's crucial that we get it right, and I'm not sure we've got it quite right just yet. I know the horsemen I talk to are, you know, at a loss to some degree as far as, okay, what do I do now? You know, and I think that's not right. So hopefully we can cover it a little bit, and I think getting horsemen's opinions out there and thoughts on it, you know, rational opinions, is a good thing, and we'll try to do that.
Let me kind of round things out before we take our second break. And I guess Joe Longo just let us know Joe's going to postpone a visit till tomorrow. We were going to go through some of the betting menu elements, news, so we'll save him for tomorrow. But storylines that you're prepared for. I mean, write a column. You wrote a column about writing a column and suggested 48 different potential columns and stories. What are you looking forward to most?
Yeah, I feel like I've got 148, and I've only been here 3 days. But right off the bat, I did the preview on the Skylarville, and I had a great visit with Butch and Ginny Reed,
yeah,
and their daughter Whitney and Vidario. And I don't know how she's going to run, but she's a beautiful horse. And Diana is loving Saratoga just by the looks at her, because she's been here a few days too, and that was fun. And then I also got to meet Just Cindy, who's the favorite in there with Kelly Wheeler for Eddie Keneally, and same thing. I don't know how she's going to run, but she's loving Saratoga as well, and looks like $1 million. So it's fun for me to get out and walk around the backside, go meet horses, and write stories like that. For us at the meet, I think it's, you know, we play it as it comes and try to just adapt to the races as they happen. I'm looking forward to seeing how Trevor McCarthy does in his sort of first coming to Saratoga for the meet, and going to see how I just passed them. Joe McGlure and Trevor McCarthy were driving as I crossed the street here, and they hollered out to me. I asked them what the over-under was on wins, and they said, "You set the line, we'll beat it." So we'll see. I think it's going to be fun to see how Trevor fits in at a Saratoga, and you know, we're always looking for just horses and people that are sort of under the radar a little bit with good stories to tell.
What matchup, what's the favorite race that you look forward to every year?
I love the turf racing, and I like how they kind of build toward some of the others. I mean, like with the Forbidden Apple this weekend, headed to some of the, you know, a couple out of there will branch out and head to some of the other turf races later in the meet. I love the Sword Dancer. I think it's always a fun race, and some of the longer grass races where the tactics come into play. A friend of mine's father owns a little piece of Temple City Terror. Is that the filly's name?
Yeah, from Pocadasis.
Yeah. So they live in Delaware, and they're hoping to get her to the Glens Falls, and there's a couple others like that out there. My son Ryan's girlfriend's father owns a piece of a horse in the first today.
Wow.
Smooth operation. And you know, again, to kind of see the connections and just the various little bits and pieces of horses and people that coming in from various places, I think is also the fun. Again, you don't get many places where you've got horses and trainers coming in from, you know, Kentucky, obviously New York, the Mid-Atlantic guys coming up, you know, the horses from, you know, there's a Tom Law's chasing a Sanford story with a New Jersey bread.
Jersey,
you know,
bread.
And I'm like,
I saw,
you know,
that.
Yeah,
I saw that.
I love that. You know, the variety, and that's it's the Hollycrest Farm people. You know, and you know they go back a long time. You know, I mean, those are the kind of things that you love to go right about and go find. And you know, again, for me, I love walking the backside and just finding a horse and the people and telling that story. So we're going to try to do the best we can as usual. Hopefully no more 1:30 in the morning phone calls from the printer.
The Saratoga special and Joe Clancy. And you know, it's funny, Tom was laying out everybody's Twitter address, and he trimmed 2 years off your birthday. He got you
I
up.
Need that.
He got you up to Joe Clancy 67.
No. I don't know who that is.
I had 65. To pull him. Yeah, I had to pull him. I had to pull him back to 65. Pretty funny. Pretty funny. Joe Clancy, everybody, and all over town when you get here. And you know, for those that aren't going to come, one way to feel like you're at Saratoga Daily essentially is the special online, and you get to thumb through it like as if it was a paper, and you can print out the selections that we talked about with Tom and Chapazian and everybody, and Charlie Bedard and Jessica Paquette. This is horseracing.com, and for, you know, for all kinds of writing and really every part of the business and the industry. But you will feel like you were at Saratoga for 7 weeks. Or as Andy corrected me, 7.5 weeks.
My wife says 12, so I don't know.
12?
It feels like 12 when she's at home dealing with the dog and I'm up here, you know. So
does she come up?
Yeah,
she'll be up
for some time,
right?
In the middle. But
I love it.
But 7.5/8, we're somewhere in there, right?
Yeah, exactly. Saratoga special, you can follow as well. And Tom Law and Joe Clancy, Sean Clancy. And just an invaluable resource that is part of the fabric of the summers here and really of the game year round. Let's take a break, our last of the morning, and we'll come back looking for one or two visitors before we wrap up. And I got the changes for you when we come back. For those of you that are driving, you're on your way and you're wondering about the scratches, I'll provide those for you next. Stay with us. Back to Saratoga opening day, SiriusXM at the races.
The latest racing news.
It's At the Races with Steve Bick on Sirius XM Radio.
Thoroughbred horse racing is back in Virginia as Colonial Downs conducts its More Racing, More Money summer season presented by Woodford Reserve. An early week racing schedule and average daily purses of $625,000. The 9-week meet runs from July 11th through September 7th with racing every Monday, Tuesday, and Wednesday at 1:45 p.m. Wager on Colonial's 50-cent pick 5 with a low 12% takeout and a new carryover provision. All races will be broadcast on TVG this summer. Colonial Downs racing.